I'm Christine Dean. This is Live from Studio A, and joining us today is a Minnesota singer-songwriter, Tim Fast. Welcome, Tim.
Welcome. Thank you.
Not your first visit to our studios. You say you think you were here a while ago.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
So welcome back. Glad to have you back.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
And your latest album released this year, it was called Crooked Door. And let's hear a song from it, and then we'll come back and chat a little bit. And you're going to do Mike and Ellen's Place, right?
Yes. This is the song I got the title from. On the coast of the Blue Ridge Mountains, anchored on a hill in Carolina Glee, Jade Acres surrounds their sweet cabin, and sea-litting nature have it sweet inside their home. Inside yourself, you can feel comfort and warmth like you can never feel alone. It took many loads to build that camp, but a family's old made it home. You gave
Mike and Ellen's Place.
Tim Fast, live from Studio A, and that is the first cut on his album, Crooked Door. And I kind of get the impression that Mike and Ellen are real people that you know. Is that the case?
They are real actual people. I started touring out of state in 2004, and it was one of the first places I played way far away from home, all by myself, with a prayer and a hope, and I met these people, and we became really good friends. Now, when I come through town, they always put me up, and they have a special night where they have music at their coffee house. Now, the coffee house is called Crooked Door, and that's kind of where I got it from. They're just about the nicest people you ever met.
They sound like it from the song.
Yeah.
That's nice to have people out there on the road that you have those experiences with.
Yeah, it is. It really is. You know, home away from home. It's a friendly face when you're out, you know, out playing.
Now, you're from Minnesota. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Minnesota originally.
Which part of Minnesota, I guess?
Just north of Minneapolis. I graduated from Elk River High School. And I've been all over the U.S. since then. I lived in California for a short while, but the last few years I've been traveling quite a bit, from coast to coast, pretty much. So,
do you have a home base here in Minnesota still?
Yeah, I actually just moved back to Elk River three years ago. I lived in Cross Lake, Minnesota for about 15 years. And my kids went to Pequot Lakes School, and when my youngest was graduating, I realized that there was nothing in my way anymore and that I could do whatever I wanted or live with what I didn't do. And so I chose the hard path of going out and playing music.
And that's kind of a scary time of life to do that in.
It's a scary time, period.
But you weren't brand new to music. You had done a lot of music in your past, right?
Yes,
like
yeah.
Growing up. And
yeah.
But you for a while, you might have thought that was done. Is that right?
Yeah, there was a short time in my life that I just had, I didn't know where to go anymore, and I knew I didn't want to be in a band anymore because I was so tired of putting them together and watching them fall apart, and put another one together. The last band launched my solo career by breaking up after 8 months worth of practices and then doing one gig, and then we broke up. So I owe it to them for launching my solo career and why I'll never play in a band again.
What kind of bands were you playing in?
Well, we did a lot of tasteful music, anything from John Hyatt to Steve Earle to R.E.M. to...
So you were doing a little more cover stuff,
yeah,
before.
Yeah, Chris Isaak and things like that, yeah.
And then you kind of came to a certain point in your life that you were describing there, and you said, well, all right, no more bands, and I am going to take this music seriously. So what was your first step in that when you decided that you really wanted to, all the kids were out of the nest and you wanted to pursue it?
Well, I did a lot of research of the field I was going into and what were the odds and what kind of money I could expect to even make in the end. And I knew I was
screwed.
If I could use the word screwed. But, you know, ever since I've been doing it, it just seems like something always happens to confirm that I am on the right path or I should be doing this. I initially volunteered for a radio station, KAXE in Grand Rapids.
One of our sister stations?
Yeah, and that way I figured I would be right in the soul of all music. I had the access to your library. I got to go on the air. And I really connected with everything that was going on in solo careers out there. I started writing, and although I was testing the water with my original material, deep down inside I knew it wasn't that good. And I was just hoping somebody would bite on it and encourage me. But, I mean, I need some help because I was competing with people with degrees in music and history of family in music, and they had the name. And so I started going down to Asheville, North Carolina. I heard about this Contemporary Folk Week. It's a workshop. Tom Paxton teaches there, Kathy Matea, James Keelahan. That's where I met Cliff Eberhardt down there, and I tour with him now sometimes. And so I went down there, and I've gone down there 9 years now. And it's like everybody says, well, how much can you learn? I said, well, it's not even about that anymore. It's just, just being in a community of people for a whole week, no radio, no TV, nothing but music and a lot of support. So I'll be going back down there this year also.
Yeah, the first time that you went down there, what kind of things helped you with your songwriting? And what, and had you been writing songs before when you were in the
yes.
other bands and stuff? You'd been writing songs but not really doing
nothing,
much with them?
Yeah, or? right. Okay. And I didn't do anything with them, and I didn't do any recording. And, you know, after I left there, it took me like 3 months to come down from the clouds. I was just walking around like I've been snorting ether for a long time. And every time I'd walk into somebody's house, I would just babble on and on and on and on how great this workshop was. So I started trying my own and using what I learned. I mean, I learned from like Steve Seskin, who wrote all of Tim McGraw's first hits. John Smith, I don't know if you guys
know. He's actually been here before, yep.
All right, okay.
He was here with Daryl Scott one time.
John was one of the first songwriting classes I took. And just listen to them and their technique, and then I realized that, yeah, there is a way to writing a song. There is a certain way. They can't be 8 minutes long, for one thing. They'll never get on the radio. But
although you're a Beatles fan, and you know that they kind of broke some of those rules too. So
absolutely, yeah. I always use Yesterday. I think it was 1 minute and 58 seconds,
mm-hmm.
and it'll live forever. So when everybody tells you it has to be 3 minutes and 29 seconds, there's always the exception to the rule.
If you're the Beatles, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Beatles set me on this path, because I remember seeing that when I was a little kid laying in front of the TV on the Ed Sullivan Show. And I remember my dad cussing about their hair. And boy, when I asked for a guitar after that, it was like, no way, you are not getting a guitar. So I started trying to build my own guitar. And I think my parents got sick of it. I never got one I built to work right. And finally, the following year, on my birthday, they got me a guitar. So.
Oh, that's great. Well, let's hear what you've learned since then. Let's hear another tune. And what do you want to play for us next?
Here's another track off my new CD. I'm really proud of this CD. I've had a lot of help from some really great people. Gary Rayner from the Prairie Home Companion Show, and another one of their guest stars, Joe Savage, played pedal steel and some dobro. And so it's doing really well.
So since you've kind of given up on the band thing, but is it nice to have people to play with in the studio?
It is excellent. And the only thing is, see, I always try to be fair. People find me to be a very fair person. But I don't want to be fair when it comes to a band anymore. I want to be the boss, and I want to be in charge, and I don't want anybody quitting on me or, you know, derailing my goals, you know, anymore. So I'm going to play you a love song I wrote. By the title of it, you wouldn't guess it was a love song. It's called Damage Me. But that would all depend on what kind of love you're into. So, beautiful,
damage me. Just a little beat up sweatshirt and yellow sundress, anything your way makes me a mess. I keep it hidden. You could damage me. Love to watch you sleep, even when you snore. Wake me in the morning if I can hold you anymore. I keep it hidden. You can damage me. Far as though I was true, but oh, it's wrong. I met you. You're beautiful. You could damage me.
Tim Fast, live from Studio A, another cut from his latest album, Crooked Door. And Tim, it's your latest. You've put out, what, three albums now? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about the progression of the albums. Like, how does making this one compare to the previous ones that you did?
Well, the first one, I used to get up every morning and I'd take my mattress and I'd put that over my bedroom window. And I'd take my box spring and I'd put it over my door. And I'd turn on my recording equipment and I'd start recording on my little digital recorder. And then I had a guy, when I was all done recording it, he kind of preamped it and cleaned it up a little bit, and I put that out. It wasn't bad for a first project, but I'm all out of my 1,000 that I made, which was one of the scariest things I ever did. You wonder when you walk out of there with 10 boxes and your bumper's dragging on the ground if you're going to sell all these CDs. But I did, and I haven't duplicated that CD. It's not in circulation right now, but there were some really good songs on there, and I may go back and re-record a couple of those tracks later. The last one did really good. Last one I've done really well with the Starlight Drive-In CD.
And then this one, you did it. Where did you record it?
I recorded that with a guy I know. His name's Gary Bartik. He's got a degree in engineering and music, and he's got one of the best ears. Now, he doesn't have a $500,000 studio, but he's got a studio in a warehouse with some of the best equipment you can buy without spending tens of thousands. And
you probably don't have to put the mattress against the window.
No.
So it's a step up from the beginning anyway.
Right. And then to go back on how things happen to kind of reinforce that I'm on the right path or I'm doing the right thing. I had no idea how I was going to pay for the mastering. And I knew I wanted a good master job. And I had entered a contest down in La Crosse at the Great Rivers Folk Festival. And I won that contest, and I got $850 of recording time, which I put towards my mastering, and then I got a little bit of cash. And so that turned out really, really sweet. And the guy had won some Grammys. Let me think of the name of the studio. Soundstrations. His name is Brett House. And I think he won a Grammy for recording Michael Martin Murphy's CD. And he did some recording for John Smith, too. So, I was really pleased with the way the CD came out.
And the people that you got to play with you and all of that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Looks like a lot of fun. Do you do many festivals? You were talking about the workshop that you go to every year, but how about festivals?
I have just been contacted by more festivals this year than any time. I've been going to the West Coast the last 2-3 years. In Oregon, Washington, I've been really well received out there in Montana, the Bozeman area, and Idaho. And I'll be going out for some of those festivals. You know, some of the big festivals, unless you're under a major label, you're not even going to get listened to. But there are some festivals I'm going to be playing at this year, hopefully, and I haven't finalized it. But things are really looking up. In a few weeks, I'm going to be back on tour with Cliff Eberhardt. I've toured, I don't know how many states the last 3 years. And I've done quite a few shows with him, and it's just really neat to hang out with all the Red House people and President and all the artists we run into. And I mean, even stopping in the studio with him, John Gorka and Cliff Eberhardt said, "Hey, you got your harmonicas?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "We're going to shoot a video." And I just broke out in a sweat, like, what are we going to do? I had no idea. It was a one-take thing, And I did a song with Cliff Eberhardt, and then I did a song with John Gorka, which is posted on their webpage now. So I like to name drop. It helps you. I mean, anybody that's ever got anywhere in this business, somebody helped them along the way, somewhere, somehow. And Cliff Eberhardt has really helped me a lot. He has, I think, one of the first gigs we did, it was at the Cedar Cultural Center. And 5 minutes before we took the stage, he goes, "Here, try this one." And I start playing harmonica. He go, and I get halfway through it. "That's good enough. Here we go." Wow, we really nailed it. And I don't know how, but, well, you know, be careful what you wish for.
So how long have you been playing harmonica compared to guitar?
I've probably been playing harmonica. I think I picked it up in about the mid-80s. And when I was playing in bands, I heard stuff that Huey Lewis was playing on harmonica, and I thought, oh, that'd be really cool to do. So I started, you know, I actually had one when I was younger, but it was Row, Row, Row Your Boat and Silent Night. And I really, you know, I knew how to bend notes, but and I can't even tell you what I'm doing, why I'm doing a harmonica, but it's become one of my stronger instruments now. So I'm not afraid to sit in with anybody as long as I have the right key harmonica. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Wow.
That's a lot of fun. Well, we have time for another one. What do you want to wrap up with here?
Well, I'm going to end with something a little more upbeat, and I don't think anybody dies in this song, which is not usually the case in all my songs. My son always asks me, "Why do you always have to kill somebody in your songs, Dad?" I was sitting in Lake City, Minnesota at a little coffee house I used to go down to on Sunday mornings, and this 85-year-old gal named Donna. I always sit down and have coffee with her, and she talks. And I mean, she could be a stand-up comedian. I would go out on the road with her any day. But she was talking about her ex-husband, and she said, she goes, "Yeah, my husband, sometimes he'd just get up in the morning, he wouldn't take a shower or nothing, he'd throw a hat on his head, and he'd say, 'This is a don't give a damn day.'" I said, "That's golden." "It's a don't give a damn day, but I'll take it anyway. Wasn't like I ever had to say, 'It's a don't give a damn day.' Feel so tired and I feel so beat, just too damn good between the sheets. I can lose if I don't compete. It's a
My couch is calling. Oh, I love that sound. It's a don't give a damn day.
Tim Fast, live from Studio A. Thanks a lot, Tim.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a good time coming up to Duluth.
Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Cameron Flackney, and with funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, with additional support provided by The Playlist, Thursday nights at 9 on PBS North on WDSE WRPT.